Greetings, people. What's up? This is Troy Denning. This is Invisible Radio. I'm sorry I've been away for so long. We've been ironing a lot of stuff out, but it's all good. And we're back. And today I had a couple guests on. I had a Danielle Abrigo, tattooer originally from California, now working out of Brooklyn, New York, at a Three Kings tattoo. He's a great multimedia artist. As well as Lango Oliveira, a friend of mine from Brazil. He now works out of Skull and Sword, the epic institution in San Francisco, California. And, you know, we had a really good time, and you get to know them and see how they do the thing. I highly advise that you check them both out after listening to their interviews, and enjoy. This is Invisible Radio. All right, we're back after long last. Invisible Radio is back on the air. Today I'm joined by my good friend Danielle Abrigo. What's up, man?
Hello.
What's up? So I wanted to have you on, like, since I envisioned doing the show, and, you know, because you're just such a against the grain, different type of tattooer. You know, you start, we all have like similar beginnings, but then you kind of took it and spun off into this other realm, which, you know, totally suits you. And it just seems like, you know, it's super individualistic. So I wanted to have you on here, and so you and I can talk and, you know, see what's really going on and what, you know, what you're up to these days. So you're born in Southern California, yeah?
Yep, born in Pomona, California.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about your childhood. Like, what was the prevalent culture, and then, like, what really got you into tattooing?
Well, the city that I grew up in, it was pretty conservative, but it was right on the edge of a pretty heavy Hispanic area. So for me and all my friends, we were, you know, hanging out, watching lowriders, going to the swap meet.
Okay.
You know, just kind of skateboarding around town.
Like the SoCal skate punk, pretty much California dream lifestyle. Okay. And then, so when you first started seeing tattoos, you know, who were the main players at that time? Was Jack Rudy already like a well-known guy?
Yeah.
And that style of tattooing?
The area that I were, there was a few people that were pretty well-known. One, you know, we saw a lot of Jack Rudy tattoos around. Mostly we saw Corey Miller tattoos.
Okay.
Those were the
So ones. You're close to that Upland area?
Yeah.
Okay. That area, like the whole, that inland area, yeah. I guess you call it, like that's just a total mystery to me. And I never know what's close to what, because I always think of Southern California as just the coast. I think of it from that.
Yeah.
That perspective.
Yeah, exactly. It's a sore subject to some people. The Inland Empire.
I.E. Holmes.
They back on the Inland Empire.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, like this fucking Regino all the time. He's like, fuck that place. I'm never going back there.
Mad love for Inland
Empire. Yeah. You know, I know a lot of really cool people from that area. When did you get your first, who did you get tattooed by in the outset, and then what made you decide that you wanted to actually do something like that? Like, were you doing art and stuff yourself?
So the first tattoo that I got was basically just trying to find the cheapest one I could get.
Okay.
So, I lied. Let me start over. The first tattoo I got a fake ID when I was 15,
mm-hmm.
and I got tattooed, at the shop pretty close to my house. And the guy knew I was, you know, he knew I was underage.
I was like, get in the chair.
Yeah, he was like, make sure your mom doesn't come back and try to bust me.
Right.
So then after that was kind of bullshit. Like, the first real tattoo I got tattooed by Carrie Barba.
Okay.
And I had seen her work in a magazine.
In, like, Anaheim or, okay.
Yeah, it was in Anaheim. So that was, like, the first real tattoo I got.
And what year was this around?
That was probably, like, 98, 99.
Oh, shit. Really?
Really.
But I met you... I became aware of you when, because I'd just gotten to Japan after you had been there.
Oh, yeah.
I confused, like, trips, so I was just thinking, like, because I was thinking, man, I was in Japan already, and like, or I was already there in 99. Okay, so, yeah, that was around that time. Around right before we all moved, like, me and O'Donnell, everybody came to New York.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, like, who were the... So you spent time with Corey and those guys at 6 Feet Under?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I started tattooing, I was apprenticed by Matt Green, who, this guy, he was originally from Biloxi, Mississippi.
Okay.
And he was apprenticed by Sailor Moses, kind of an old-time circus
tattooer. Okay, I remember that guy.
And so I worked at Classic Tattoo for probably about a year and a half. And
Sailor Moses always had some really sick sick styles in the magazines of like mullets with
weird.
He always had like it was always something like some tank top that was like something you got from buying a carton of cigarettes at the deli, and then like some sick like layered mullet.
It was kind of like the OG riffraff.
Totally.
I ended up working for Corey a couple years after that. And I worked for him for about 3 years. And that's probably who I picked up the most from.
Okay.
Was working with him. And, you know, anytime I wasn't working, I had so much respect for him that I just kind of wanted to sit around and see what he was doing and see how he was doing it.
Well, that shop also seems like they had a really good thing going on there as far as, like, he'd been established there for so long. And you know, like, people had a real sense of confidence that he wasn't going to go nowhere. You know what I mean? Like, he was, like, their neighborhood dude.
I mean, when I got there, there was two or three people that had been working there for 10 years, and they're still there.
That's great. So initially you started doing a lot of Black and Gray?
So the Black and Gray wasn't even really too hard until out here. I mean, I did probably 50-50 in California, mostly color stuff, but it was kind of, strangely enough, advice from you. It was like two or three days after I moved here and started working for you, and I remember you saying, man, I don't know if these California tattoos are going to work out here.
As far as, like, people really, really understanding it?
But latching on.
But in hindsight, that shit really took off. Like, it took off later.
Yeah.
You know, it, like, really caught on later. Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, everything is timing, you know? And then, like, next thing you know, 2 years later, you know, you're in London and all these kids are getting clowns. You know what I mean? And, like, chola chicks, and you're like, oh, shit, you know, I didn't see this happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's very fickle, and you can't always predict which way that's going to go.
No.
You got tattooed early by a lot of the, I remember you got that big Phoenix from Grime.
Yeah.
Around, you know, like, around 2004 or 5 or something?
Yeah. I was hanging a lot with Matt Shama at the time.
Okay.
And so he was telling me, you know, giving me advice of who I should get tattooed by. Because, you know, he knew I wanted to get a lot of tattoos, and he was pointing me in the right direction. So, yeah, pretty early on, I got a lot of tattoos from Grime and from Adam Barton and from Shama.
Okay, that crew around that time.
Trevino, and just, you know, as many as I could.
And then you started, when was your first trip to Japan, and, like, what was that like?
First trip to Japan was probably 2004, 2005, something right around there. It was great. I went out and worked at Three Tides a few times for maybe 2 or 3 weeks at a time.
You're already, when I was there, it seemed like you were already pretty established as like a returning guest at that place.
Yeah, I was in a pretty shitty relationship, so any travel was...
That'll make it, that'll make traveling even more...
I wanted to travel as much as I could.
Yeah, that'll make it even sound more attractive, just being able to be rootless and just get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Who were your main influences at that time?
Main influences at that time were, you know, the people that I was working with at Three Tides. You know, Shama, Trevino.
The rotating American crew.
Kind of rotating American crew.
Gotcha.
But, you know, the classics too, like Jack Rudy and all the Black and Gray stuff. I tend to always kind of fall back towards that.
Yeah, I mean, I was really... when you first came out here, like, you were doing, you know, everything that people asked of you, you already had a handle on it. Like, I remember you did, like, some koi sleeve, and I was like, oh, shit, he can do all this kind of stuff super, super accurately and respectfully. And also, at the same time, you were doing a lot of the old masters type of paintings in your side, you know what I mean? In your personal life. I always thought that was really cool, because I always loved artists that can just approach everything, you know, as a, you know, like, a steak is not a burger and a burger is not a chicken sandwich.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, to not, like, not try to always just make everything, it can have your stamp on it, and it can, like, look personalized, but still there's always a best way to look at everything. And, like, just because you focus on, like, kind of more realistic rendered tattoos doesn't mean if somebody wants a traditional Americana piece that you should ever try to lend any of those techniques to it. Like, you should be as respectful as possible of the way that that stuff looks best. Tell me about how you got into oil painting, and when, you know, like, how that affected your tattoo technique, and, like, what things did you bring from that? Like, what did you really learn from doing that? And how do you think it, you know, like, applied to your tattoos, and, like, what to and what not to do?
Well, I mean, early on I was painting. My mom's a pretty big influence for that. She encouraged
She's
me.
A fine artist?
She was a classically trained artist. She went to Art Center in Pasadena.
Right.
It's kind of similar to, you know, like a Pratt or something
right
here.
That's very lucky. You know, you're very fortunate to, just for the sake that she's probably a reasonable person.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, all my friends whose parents are artists, like, you know, because my, you know, I always think, like, well, that was probably pretty cool because they weren't like a fucking, they weren't like a truck driver.
Yeah.
You know, like, they at least had an idea that something else was possible.
Yeah.
Instead of just grinding and just being miserable.
Yeah.
So that's cool. When you moved to New York, like you were saying just about how I said I wasn't sure about how the black and gray stuff was going to pick up. Do you think, what was the biggest time marker on like when you really realized that you wanted to do different types of stuff? Cause I know you were doing a lot of, you were pushing forward doing a lot of somewhat traditional-ish, like Matt Shama, Chris Trevino-ish Japanese work for a while. And you were pushing pretty hard on that. And then I noticed that it just kind of like, then you just kind of went off and started doing your own kind of individualistic style tattoos. It wasn't so much, you weren't as greedy for space,
mm-hmm.
you know? You're just more about the piece itself.
Yeah.
And, you know, then getting across your message with that piece instead of like, oh shit, you know, I got to be doing sleeves all day.
Yeah.
Or I need more backs, you
yeah.
know, in my book or whatever, which is like still a lot of tattooers live like that.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest influence for me was a couple of years after working here with you, I was working with Thomas Hooper at Brooklyn Adorn. And, you know, he was really pushing me to just try different stuff, not really care about, you know, what the audience might think, but just to, like,
yeah, of course.
You know, do the tattoo that you want to do. And, you know, he also showed me a lot about using rotary machines and
mm-hmm.
sort of change up, you know,
the techniques that you can achieve with a different type of machine.
Yeah, exactly. And just, you know, the format of the sleeve and
I'm sorry it's so hot in here, but I have to turn the fan off or else it makes tons of noise. I'm working that out. Today has been the most miserable day of the year. Dude, everybody's fucking going crazy. Like, everybody's been bumping into each other, like, all sticky and shit, and everybody's, like, they're kind of at the end of the rope, patience-wise, so I gotta figure some new shit out.
The subway was a mess.
I bet you're a better man than I. Fuck, I can't ever... if I made just enough to take the cab home that day, I'm spending it all on the fucking cab or riding, you know, like I can't fuck with the public transit anymore. You initially moved out to New York.
Yeah.
I remember cause you came and did a couple guest spots here.
Yep.
And we had a crazy ass fucking time.
Yeah, it was great.
We got initially introduced through Masa at Three Tides.
Masa, and then also with RG. I worked at a convention with RG.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then it was like, okay, we're all part of the same kind of continuum, you know? And so you came and did a couple guest spots here, and you happened to come out here at a very pivotal time where everybody's life was kind of in disarray, but that usually makes for a lot of fun.
Yep.
So we were fucking raging. We were, everybody here was going out every night. We're getting thrown out of bars, like all sorts of crazy shit. Like there's a lot of, you know, so for somebody just coming into town for like a week, it must seem like New York was just the funnest place in the world. Because you caught it. Because not every summer is like that. You know what I mean? Like it's always peaks and valleys. Like, oh yeah, remember this year? And then it's another 3 years where like, it's just nobody ever even goes out.
Yeah.
Anymore. So that was one of the ones where it was like everybody was fucking raging.
Every night.
Like every night. Yeah. It was like some sort of mass just like anxiety. You know, like so everybody had this kind of energy that they needed to burn off. And so you were here for a while. You know, we had a pretty packed house, and then Lori was opening the new big location.
Yep.
So, you know, and you know, you've always been friends with Thomas and Timothy and those guys.
Yep.
I thought it was like a natural move for you to go and just, you know, check out those guys and see what was up with them. And then, so tell me about your experience there. Like, it was a pretty awesome, was amazing setup.
That's a pretty pivotal moment as well, because at that time, you know, working with Thomas and Chris O'Donnell and Timothy Hooper and Shinji-san
mm-hmm.
and Yoni and Kaz. And
right. It's a,
the list
it's
goes
a,
on.
Yeah, it's a star-studded lineup.
I mean, so the amount of inspiration that is there is pretty amazing.
Right.
I mean, that working at that shop was a, you know, did a number for my career, and, you know, I'd be the first person to always say that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, definitely, it was not a lateral move. Like, you, it was like a really good come up for you to be able to, and just to have that kind of space.
Yeah.
You know, because especially at maybe being from California, you know, working in the Lower East Side immediately where everybody's up in your grill to, yeah, like just having a little bit of distance and just being in an area of Brooklyn where you just have a little bit. You know, where you
can...
a
little bit of breathing room.
Breathing room, and you can just go and have a cigarette without people fucking with you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's something that, you know, is not, you know, not to be overlooked. Tell me about, like, you're involved, I don't know a whole lot about it, but I know you're involved in, like, a lot of different, like, music movements and stuff like that now. And how do you think, like, with the bands that you're into, and, like, you've done, like, some collabos with musicians, yes?
I mean, a couple of things. Like, one of the things, there's a singer, songwriter, rapper, Theophilus London, and I traded a tattoo for an acapella, and then my brother and I did a remix of it.
You're actually messing with the music yourself. You're like,
yeah, we're actually making music ourselves.
That's it. That's cool. That's cool that somebody would be.
It was like,
because a lot of visual artists wouldn't do that. A lot of visual artists would be like, no, you can't take my drawing and then just do what you want with it and then sell it. You know, like, fuck that.
ASAP Rocky acapella also.
Okay. So that's awesome. That's super cool. And how much does that take up your time?
Well, for a while I was pretty equally, you know, tattooing, and then it was just kind of on the night side. Like, when I would get out of work, I would meet up with my brother Ethan, and then we would just...
Do I know him?
You've probably met him.
Probably met him through you.
He's lived out here a few years.
Okay.
But, you know, just meet up and work together until we get tired and then call it a night. But, you know, we always put steady effort into it. And,
okay,
the group's called Mother Brother. We have a SoundCloud.
That's your group?
Yeah, that's us.
No, because I've seen the promo stuff from them around. I didn't know that was you guys.
Yeah, that's us. And we have a SoundCloud page and stuff. But, yeah, we went on Sway in the morning with Sway, the old MTV
the
DJ.
The Sway and King Tech, that guy?
Sway's Universe.
That's sick. He's from the Bay Area.
He's from the Bay Area.
Yeah, I remember he had a show in the Bay Area when I was out there. That's funny. And what else, like, what other kind of projects have you got going on, like, with your... You had a show last week, right, in Greenpoint or something?
A show opened up on Montrose and Lorimer at a gallery called Mud Guts.
Okay.
And it opened up...
A tattooer owns that place, correct?
Yeah, Mark Cross.
I was going to go just to say what's up to you and support, but the minute we were leaving it started fucking raining so hard, I was like, fuck that. Yeah, like, especially in an art gallery on a summer night when it's fucking pouring rain. And what other kind of, what kind of tattoos mostly do you get into now? And how does, you know, you have a really good, you work full time at Three Kings?
I'm working 4 days a week, full time.
4 days a week. Yeah, well, that's good. That's, tell me about the situation that you got there, and, like, tell me about what your workload is like. Because you travel quite a bit. Like, you know, I've seen you on these crazy trips to the Andes or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
So tell me about that kind of stuff, and tell me what you brought back from that as far as, you know, like, if it influences your art and your music at all.
Well, the shop right now, it's nice. I mean, I have 4 days a week. I'm working usually 2 or 3 appointments a day.
Okay.
I'm usually doing just one-point tattoos. You know, I'm doing roses, skulls, like, you know, just kind of standard classic black and gray subject matter.
So you still really enjoy doing those type of tattoos?
Oh, yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not so much the complexity of it, but just, like, you know, every time I can do it differently.
And when it's done, like, when it looks really nice, it looks so nice.
Yeah, just keep it simple, make them look nice. I'm just doing tattoos, that's it.
That's cool. And then what else, like, what other kind of, do you have your mother-brother thing going on, and then what else?
Oh, you wanted me to mention the traveling.
Yes.
Oh, so this, we've made a couple of trips. Like, once a year, we try to get out of the city just for sanity's sake. And so for the last 4 years, my wife and I have been making trips. Like, we went to Guatemala, to Peru. We drove across the Yucatan, went through Mexico this past January.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you can get pretty cooped up in the city if you don't get out and get a little bit of fresh air. And
definitely.
I mean, the food down there and the archaeological sites, like, we just kind of go just to be in a different world. And, you know, once a year is good to get out of the city, at least.
That's, yeah, I mean, it definitely. And it should be somewhere that's, like, your choice and not just, like, a mandatory family trip.
Yeah.
you know, which is like, you know, those
little,
you always have to do that kind of shit. What else you want to talk about, man?
Shit, let's get weird.
Get weird. Well, I was going to get super weird, but then I decided to go on a, like, some, not a cleanse, but just like a detox.
Yeah.
Last couple days, so we can't get that weird.
All right.
But what kind of shit, like, what do you want to get into? Like, what's going on in Brooklyn right now? Is it totally fucked up? Is tattooing over, or is it still, do you think there's still a future in it?
I think that there's plenty of tattooing left in Brooklyn and New York. I mean, you know, there's obviously a current oversaturation of tattooing, but good tattooing will never die.
Yeah, that's and you know, it means that, you know, if you're a good tattooer, you can't complain because, you know, the other people are doing it, but you still kind of got to be on your toes a little bit because you got to know that, like, when people, you're not the only game in town anymore, so when people have options, you know what I mean? Like, if you give people the runaround, like we all have the experience doing, and we've all, you know, like we've all been known to do that, then it's like, you know, okay, maybe somebody's going to fucking not choose you next time. And that's
it. I've encouraged people to go get tattooed by other people for the same reason.
Well, like, I do as well, especially if they're you know, high maintenance.
Yeah, if they don't want you to do it, then like, why should you do it?
Well, I find myself still like, the other day I was thinking about this, like I you know, like sometimes somebody will just catch you at that moment where you're in between a bunch of different things, and then you agree to do something that you're like, it's not really your style.
Yeah,
and then you do it. And then you're like, fuck, you know, because now this person wants something kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I just kind of like, you know, fucked up the area by doing their idea initially, when all it would have taken was like just a little more talk on my part to talk them into getting something 100% me the whole way.
Well, because they wanted you to do it in the beginning in the first place.
And
they
didn't,
forgot about that.
And they didn't, but they didn't really know you that well. They didn't feel comfortable approaching you about something. And then like, as you're sitting and talking to them, you're kind of breaking it down and talking about art with them. And then they're like, oh, that's what I want.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, oh, and then you're like, motherfucker, like, you. what's happening, like, with, we can edit this out if you want. Do you want to talk about, like, the Genesis type of situation or any of the stuff that you're doing with them? I mean, when you did that series of paintings.
Uh-huh.
With Genesis, of like the teeth and all that stuff. For those that don't know, I don't know what the person currently going by, Genesis P. Orridge.
Yeah, Genesis P. Orridge.
Genesis P. Orridge, formerly of Psychic TV, or probably currently of Psychic TV.
Currently of Psychic TV, formerly of Throbbing Gristle.
Yes, yeah. Like, major industrial music, experimental industrial music, performance art.
I think she coined the word industrial music.
Okay.
That's credited to her, so that's pretty heavy.
So, very complex, interesting person. And how did your relationship with her come about? Because I remember when you first met her, you were just like, dude, you know, this is a fucking crazy situation. and this person is pretty fucking fascinating.
Yeah.
And, you know, they came over, you know, like I went and you went and looked at their gold tooth, like their gold grill collection or something.
Well,
and
it started here.
Here
at Invisible, because Fernando and I were listening to Psychic TV pretty regularly at that summer of 2008. And so, he was the one that was like, hey, we should try to get in touch with Jen. I bet one of our friends knows somebody that knows her. And
hey,
literally,
Daniel, you know, like, we should probably just try to get in touch with Jen.
We should probably try to get in touch with Jen. So then the next day, the person that I was tattooing was this guy, Dan, and he was like, oh, I'm really good friends with Jen's assistant.
New York City, yeah, it's 1 degree of separation between anybody.
12
in,
hours
in the city.
After conception, it came
through. Yeah, totally.
So then, yeah, I went over to Jen's place, and so Jen has solid gold teeth, and like every single one has been replaced and permanent. So it's not, you know, grills or caps.
It's like full on, like stuck into the mouth.
Yeah. So I went over and took a bunch of pictures of the process materials that make the gold teeth and all the molds that the dentist used. And I was, you know, just asked
okay.
If
so I was under the impression that she had like a bunch of different like stages of the transformation, but it's actually it was just the whole process.
Yeah, it was like the process materials and then portraits of the gold teeth themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ended up having a split exhibition in Soho in 2010. And we ended up taking it to one other gallery in Chicago as well about a year later.
That's rad. That's cool. And have you done any other, because you painted all these kind of stuffs in the very old master style, I remember, right?
Yeah.
Like oil painting stuff.
Yeah, they were kind of like a classic approach to just a still life. And, you know, just, again, keeping it simple, like a tooth mold on a windowsill or something like
right.
that.
Who are your major influences in that style of painting? Like, it's probably nobody from this century.
Oh, no, totally. A couple people specifically. There's this guy in Philadelphia called Alex Konevsky. And,
he's a current contemporary painter?
A contemporary painter.
Okay.
He's one of my favorites. And then another guy is Sean Cheatham and Kim Coggan.
Okay, yeah, I know Kim.
Yeah, you know Kim. He's one of RG's good friends.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, those guys are doing paintings that, you know, they rival all the masters. And
I think so.
Yeah.
I saw
just keeping up with them was influence enough to try to paint, you know,
that's right.
20 or 30.
Well, Kim is like a super supportive.
Super.
You know, he's like, the minute you meet him, like, so he's unassuming, but you know, he's like an artist because he's just immediately so, like, interested in everything
totally.
Other people are doing, you know. So, what else is up? They let you do what you want pretty much at Three Kings?
You guys
got a lot of guys working there.
Well, we have a lot of stations.
How many full time guys you guys got there?
Well, we have.
Who owns that place now? Anyways, I don't know.
Maddie No Times.
Maddie's the owner.
Maddie's the
okay.
Owner. Yeah.
Cool.
And we have two floors. We have I think there's 13 right now. 14,
13 artists.
But there's stations for everybody. And
how many stations at one time?
It's very rare that every.
You have 13 stations.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sick.
Upstairs
that's amazing.
And downstairs. But it's very rare that everybody is there. Most of the time, maybe half of the crew is there. So, you know, it allows everybody to travel. It allows everybody to,
sure.
you know, people to work 4 days if they want.
Well, I try to be that way with everybody here. You know, it's like, just help me help you. You know, the OG guys here we have our own locked in stations, but, you know, people that are traveling or people that just do like a couple days a week.
Yeah.
You know, I try to be as cool as possible, you know, cause like, I want everybody, you know, I want to create a situation for them where they just feel comfortable and they, you know, they want to be, you know, they want to come in and earn for the house as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's part of the whole thing on tattooing is that it's the honor system,
yeah.
you know? And so you're bound, you know, I made a certain judgment call when I hired you thinking that you're an honorable man. So live up to it, you know, and
yeah,
make me happy, you
exactly.
know? What else is going on? Hit me.
What else is going on?
What else is up?
Tell
me about some crazy experiences you've had recently.
What's up
with all the smiley faces?
Oh, the smiley face. Okay,
I mean, I know you're all into positivity and all this shit. Because I used to try to get you to watch fights with me, and you weren't having that
I
at
know,
all.
Yeah.
You're like I have no interest in that
not
at all.
Feeling,
I'm like
yeah,
whatever,
not
bro.
Not feeling watching fights. the smiley face was just on some kind of just simple like you know whatever positive shit. But it was funny because there's a picture of Genesis from the 90s. And she's wearing this jacket with happy faces all over it.
Right.
So I had this picture, and it made me do, like, one or two initial drawings, and that kind of, like, exploded.
Well, I like that. I like the, you know, like, I like the subversion of the images as well. Everlasting Tattoo, the first image was, like, a wacky smiley face.
That Aaron Kane did.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
yeah.
And it was, like, you know, just all based on, like, you know, man, there's so many skulls, and there's so much death, and so much tough guy imagery
yeah.
out there, you know, to be able to be comfortable enough to, like, do something silly that's kind of tongue-in-cheek, you know, I mean, that stuff's cool. Do you have any big art, like, painting type of projects that you're working on now after you've just done this show in Brooklyn? Like, what's your next move?
Well, the next move, I mean, I've talked to a couple of people about putting stuff in group shows, but with just finishing this big solo show, I'm not in any rush to just have another one just yet because I got to put, you know, a bunch of work together.
Right.
But for the most part, I'm kind of just still just living in the, you know, this last year there was Genesis and we did a sculpture together. It was a neon cross.
Okay.
And it made its round to like three museums this last year and ended in the Andy Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you're stoked.
So I don't know, I'm kind of just taking a couple months and not trying to be too serious.
You have you're pretty loose like with your social life and as far as like, you know, you have no problem going out. You're not like one of these artists that's always like in a constant state of like, you know, having to like enforce discipline on yourself.
Oh, I don't even know what discipline is.
but you stay creative.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not really that type of person. Like
yeah.
I'm like a working, like I think it's just from having, I don't know, my dad's like super blue collar or something. Like I'm like work or play.
Yeah.
You know, and I've always envied people that can just be like, have a couple drink a couple beers and work on a drawing.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's the, like, I can't do it myself. I have to really, you know, I have to like set time aside where it'd be like, okay, during this time period, I'm going to fucking work on this drawing. Or like, but if the minute my friends come over and we have a beer, it's like, I can't think about this anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I've always admired people that can do both of those things at one time and not still maintain the creative spirit, you know what I mean? And be able to do shit, you know, other than, you know, spend the next day being fucking hungover or whatever, you know, like I've always been super admirable of that kind of shit.
I mean, the last couple of years, it really hasn't been so 50-50 because, I mean, I've pretty much cooped up and stayed in the last, you know, year.
You have a dedicated space to do your paintings and everything at?
In the house, yeah.
Oh,
there's
in
like
your
a second bedroom.
Okay.
I always have a studio space.
Yeah, well, I mean, that fucking helps. Like, just and having the agreement with, you know, with your significant other that, like, hey, when I'm in here, I'm actually working.
Yeah, actually.
You know, I'm not just dicking around.
Sure, cool, I'm man. Smoking weed and drinking, but I'm trying to work, damn it.
Well, that makes you creative. Smoking weed makes me super creative, but I have a tendency to spin my wheels a lot, you know what I mean? And like make things way more complicated than they need to be because I'm kind of like an amateur at it. Like I don't really have like a built up resistance to it. So I end up tending to just like be researching something for way
too long. Photos all night.
Yeah. Or that, you know, but when I'm in the art zone, I you know, usually get a lot done. Anything else you want to talk about, homie?
I mean, hit me.
who are your biggest influences in the New York tattoo scene? And do you still think it's tattooers that all they do is tattoo?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Do you still think that's relevant? Or do you think that like an artist kind of owes it to himself to be like a multimedia artist?
Well, there's some people whose art is purely tattooing and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. And that's
mm-hmm.
the medium that they've chosen. And I respect that because I feel like, you know, if I were to concentrate only on tattooing, that could make a prolific amount of work. But
sure.
That's not where I'm at, so I can't do that. But to people that can, I think it's great.
Well, and also you kind of like, you know, like you have to do stuff for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of my creative outlets are outside of tattooing. But it's like you really have to take time for yourself because customers will like they don't know that you're suffering or they don't know that you're just like going crazy just doing this one and they don't fucking care, you know, they'll just keep taking, you know what I mean?
They want their Tumblr design.
If you say I will come in at 9 a.m. and then leave at 9 p.m. and tattoo all fucking day, a customer would never say no, don't do that.
Yeah.
Get take a rest.
Yeah.
You know, they would never say that. They'd be like, all right, sure. Like, fit me in. Like,
cool.
I want to be your first guy of the day.
I'll take Tuesday.
Yeah, totally. All right, man. Well, this was fucking... I want to have you on here again a lot. And, you know, have you be a regular fixture on here. It was fun hanging out with you. And we'll get weirder in the future and talk about more fucked up New York shit.
Can we do a whole show just shout-outs? 30 minutes of shout-outs?
Shout out somebody right now.
Shout out Troy Denning.
Shout out
fucking boss.
Shout out to Danielle Brigo. The pacifist, smiley face, getting weird guy.
Get at me.
All right. What's your Instagram handle? Like, where can people see your work?
At Danielle Albrigo. Instagram, Twitter.
It's all at Danielle Albrigo. Do you fuck with Facebook or any of that bullshit anymore?
I fuck with Facebook. Yeah, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, maybe Vine.
Just Danielle Albrigo.
Yep.
That's it. All right. This has been Invisible Radio. Thank you very much. Take care, homie. All right. We're here with my really good friend, Lango Oliveira, from Brazil, now of San Francisco Skull and Sword. Fantastic tattoo artist. Really good friend of mine. I've known him for a really long time. What's up, man?
Yo, what up, Troy? What's happening?
Thanks for coming on the show first. This is a nice, unexpected guest. So what's up, man? Like, for those that don't know about you, you now work with Grime at Skull and Sword in San Francisco. But you've been tattooing in America for quite a while, right? Like, you started off in San Diego area, your first jobs here in the States?
Yeah, I started in San Diego.
And
then I moved to San Francisco.
Tell me about your early beginnings in tattooing. Like, did you start tattooing? You're from Rio de Janeiro? Or are you from outside, outer area?
I was born in the south of Brazil, in Paraná, but then I moved to Rio de Janeiro when I was 1 year old, and I grew up there.
Okay. And when did you decide, you grew up in, like, I'm assuming, like, punk rock skateboarding graffiti culture, like most people that eventually got into tattooing, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when did you decide, like, at what age did you decide you wanted to get into it, and then how did you, was it really hard in Brazil, like, to even find good pictures of tattoos, or just to even see good examples?
Luckily for me, it wasn't. I have friends, and my friends were, like, a lot of them, like, at least three or four, at the beginning, actually, just a couple of my friends, they either, like, one was a tattooer.
Okay.
And the other ones who were getting tattoos, and, like, so I was lucky enough to be surrounded by these people, and they, like, right off the bat, almost, they, right off, like, high school, they already encouraged me into doing that.
And what made you decide to, how long had you been tattooing in Brazil already when you decided to move to the States, or did you start after you came here already?
I started there, and I worked there for, like, 3 years before I came here.
You worked under, what's his name, Marcos? Was that his name? Marco Ribeiro?
Marcos Ribeiro. Okay. He definitely taught me a lot of tricks and all that, but I never had an apprenticeship.
Didn't have a formal apprenticeship.
So I was just trying to gather information from, like, whoever I was around, you know.
And you decided to move to, did you come straight to San Diego from Brazil?
I actually came to San Francisco first.
San Francisco first. Okay, what year was that?
What year? That was, like, in 1997.
Okay. All right, I remember that time. So did we met, though, in, what, Hollywood? Or where did we meet? We met at the tattoo convention.
You always asking that shit. We met at the tattoo tour.
San Diego.
No, Van Ness. San Francisco.
Oh, San Francisco. Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. That's all a blur. Conventions are all a fucking blur. But I remember, because I remember you came up to me and you're like, hey, I do jiu-jitsu also. And I'm like, oh, cool. You know, this was before when doing jiu-jitsu was just like default location for every guy that wanted to get in shape. Like, there was very few guys involved in tattooing that cared about that shit. And everybody else thought it was really weird. So, like, you know, you meet some Brazilian guy that can draw really good. And I remember you sent me a letter with, like, a really cool drawing of you getting me in the omoplata. And I was like, oh, this guy's cool. Like, I like this guy. He's a good guy. And so when did you always, what initially, like, what style of tattooing did you start off having an attraction to? Initially, like, was it, I know you do more, probably more Japanese stuff now than you did before, but for a long time you did more kind of like the early San Francisco, what some people would call new school, I don't like that term, but like more just kind of like a really artistic style tattooing. I saw the early stuff from you. So what is that the style of tattooing that you initially got you into it, is like seeing the new style stuff?
Pretty much. Like,
and how it related to graffiti probably as well. Like those type of looks.
For sure. And yeah, that's definitely what I was into it. And like when I first started, you know, just as soon as I saw the early 90s tattooers, just like everyone else that they're jogging, I couldn't think of anything else. So right. Like, it was tunnel vision, basically, and it was, you know, Primal Urge and Gaiaitis and...
Yeah, Aaron Kane. All that stuff.
All the amazing
All the stuff that just, like, it was so... At the time, you couldn't even... Your head, like, you would make your head swim.
Yeah.
Like, you'd just be like, what? Like, I can't, like... You just stare at it.
Yeah, I was actually lucky enough that these people that are around me, they already told me, like, yo, you gotta look at this. You gotta look at Eddie Deutsch and Greg Irons. You gotta look at fucking Marcus. You gotta look
guys
at
guys that are like a gen, like before, like the predecessors to that style.
So I was lucky, just already from the beginning, I already knew like who I should be looking at.
Well, that's how like at the time. Yeah, I mean that's like a lot of tattoo, like a lot of people's don't even know where to look to see good stuff. You know, even in the day that we live in now, where everything is at your fingertips, a lot of people still don't even know how to resource good imagery or like strong imagery for tattooing. I felt like I was lucky also because Aaron Kane would always like, everybody was jocking him, but he would always say like, I think Eddie Deutsch is the best tattooer in the world. And he's like, and we, you know, Eddie's work was so loose and wild and like really wild. And it didn't have like all the little special effects that Aaron's stuff had. But now, you know what I mean? Like, now, later, I see it, and it's like, oh, yeah, because it's, like, pure finesse, you know what I mean? And you could feel the energy coming through it. Whereas, like, you know, when you're just starting tattooing, all that matters is, you know, it's got to be super clean, and it's got to, you know, have a bunch of highlights and all this shit, you know? Like, where it's, like, the stuff that, like, there's subtleties that you can't... Early in the game, you don't really appreciate the stuff that later you're like, oh shit, you know, this thing is fucking awesome.
Exactly, and I was definitely part of that also. Mm-hmm. So like, I'll definitely not be as much as people told me, oh yo, Eddie Deutsch this and whatever. I would know for sure that this person's amazing, but you know, I'll tend to like the most the cleanest work.
Or like when people are telling you have to like some old timer guy, you're like, you're just telling me that, like, you're just, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, you're trying to fuck with me somehow, you know what I mean? Like, so you're like,
all right, I respect.
You're like, nah, but this guy's the best. And you're like, you're just fucking with me. Yeah. Come on. Were you going back and forth to Brazil at that time at all? Or did you just pretty much come here and just post it up and, you know, didn't travel back a lot for work?
No, at the time I was going back and forth. I was actually not even I didn't have the intention of moving in here and staying here.
Okay.
I was like, I'll go there and I'll learn some stuff and make some money and I'll go back to Brazil. And I kept thinking that for probably at least like, I don't remember, like 3 years or whatever. Then like I started going, like, as I was going back there, actually, since I grew up there, I started going back and just realizing that it was just more of the same. And I was like, why?
Brazil.
Yeah. Like, I really have like a nomad
personality.
So I was just like, oh, you know what? I went back and it's the same shit. It was like a deja vu. So why would I want to do that? So
When you go somewhere after living in New York, you feel like everywhere's the same as well. You know what I mean? You're like, fuck, man. Everybody's kind of doing the same shit. You know, like, I need to just stay somewhere where, you know, it may be a little more uncomfortable and there may be more of a hustle, but I feel better about committing my time to that place, you know.
Right.
So were you, I and then we hung out a bit when you were getting when I was working at Primal Urge with Grime and you were getting tattooed by him. I remember you got like two big tattoos in like the concentrated sessions, right? Like, yeah, like,
yeah, the thing is I was smart enough to be saving skin
and saving money.
Saving money and skin for like my trips here. And like I was, so when I finally had the money, like, I had to make the money first.
Right.
So I finally had the money. I was like, okay, you know, it was kind of embarrassing. I didn't have a lot of tattoos, but like, I didn't feel bad because I knew the people that I want to get work from.
Right.
So I was just like, okay, you know, one day I'm going to be at the spot and I'm going to be with the money. So I was basically just preparing myself for that time. And so when I got tattooed from Grime, I was just like, well, let's just fucking, you know, basically
get as much as we can do.
Yeah, let's just get this shit going. Like, I'm like pretty naked right now. So.
Well, I mean, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, I mean, I was lucky that I didn't have to take, I mean, I came up in San Francisco, so I was in the proximity of these guys. So I was like, well, whenever you have time, you know, let's do it.
Right, yeah.
But I realized how fortunate I was for that. But, like, I know a lot of guys like Lehi, you know, he had to make repeated trips to San Francisco to get tattooed by all the big guys before they would even look at his portfolio. You know, like, he had, and then he finally got, you know, became part of that world and decided to move out here. You know, but, like, it was a lot of, you know, like, you had to... you know, it, and it's not just the saving money and the skin for the tattooing. It's like your whole travel and everything is based around you learning something from the experience and taking something back with you, and like being as astute of a student as you can be, while at the same time not being a pain in the ass and asking too many questions. It's like you got to walk on the fence, kind of, and not be totally, you know, like in their face and be like, I'm learning shit from you, right. You know? And, yeah. But at the same, you have to learn as much as you can by stealthily, you know, and take it back with you without seeming like a spy, you right. know? Because a lot of tattooers would just, you know, they'd be like, oh, you're learning, you know, you're a tattooer. And then they would just immediately have a shitty attitude with the guy and just not talk to them at all. And just do the minimum they needed to do to finish, you know, because they were of the mindset that this person was going to eventually be competition somehow, which, you know, that's a shitty way to look at everything, but, you know, it's unavoidable. So you move back to, where were you working before you went to work with Grime at Skull and Sword?
Before I went to Skull and Sword, I was working at Seventh Son.
Okay.
Which is my my three friends. They used to own the shop together.
Yeah, so, of course.
Like, they're nice. And
they're all homies of all, you know. Right. They're all in the family. So you were there.
I was there for like half a year.
Okay.
And like actually, when I was there, it was kind of a little weird situation, just because I was working there. Also, Grammy had told me that I could work at his shop whenever I wanted as a guest.
Okay.
And, like, so I was really going, I was working with both of those shops at the same time.
Yeah, that makes everything kind of...
So like, as little as that lasted, it was, like, it was very confusing for
everyone. Yeah, and as cool as you are with the Seventh Son guys, like, Grime is still obviously your mentor.
Yeah.
You know, so it's you know, it's kind of, like, one of those situations where it's kind of like, hey, man, why don't you just do your thing? You
right, know? Right, right. So you know, I knew it was going to be, like, temporary. So okay. I was, like, hoping for, like, it just to work... what I wanted to work my whole life, which was actually at the time was Prime Artists to be a Skull and Sword.
Yeah, it was still called Prime. It was when they went back to having Marcus there. And,
yeah, right. When I was doing a guest spot, it was called Prime Artists. So okay. for me, that meant a lot.
Yeah, at right.
the time, for sure.
Well, that's a fucking pedigree. You know, it's good. A lot of people don't think.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't think about like how much it matters to like be able to have pedigree. Right. Attached to your, you know, to your title right. as an artist, you know.
And Marcus was actually still working at that shop, yeah. So that to me, like,
to be able to be around both those guys at the same time is fucking awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing, like situation.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to be, you know, at the last days of Primal Urge, and it was, you know, just so fortunate to be around during that time, watching. Marcus was already so adept, and he already had his style figured out, and he was doing, you know, he's using like live models for all of his figure studies and stuff like that, like really had a system set up. And then Grime was doing a lot of graffiti then still.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going out, you know, bombing and like doing these like racking posters and all this like really cool fun shit that I was it was really exciting to be around at that time and just building relationships with those guys. And also because you couldn't find two guys that are more different than those two. As much as people that don't know would confuse their work for each other's, you know, there's no two different, more different people than those two guys. Like, it's amazing having them guys in the same building.
For sure. To say the least.
So now you're at Skull and Sword. Tell me about the situation you guys got there. It's Grime, Yutaro, right?
Grime, Yutaro,
Henry Lewis,
and myself.
Awesome. That's a fucking killer. That's a killer setup. Do you find, I mean, how much did you watch your own? Cause I've noticed like the Skull and Sword look recently has like gotten super, super illustrative, like really, really illustrative. You know what I'm saying? Like everything is drawn so tight, and it's like such a cool alternative to everybody going in the other direction, making everything clunky and big and, you know, which
right.
that shit looks cool as fuck also. But I still love to draw for the sake of drawing and not even thinking about it being a tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, just to draw. And like, I like the tattoos like that are also just like, everything's just fucking crazy, like, hyper doodle. You know what I mean? Like, we're just keep going and, like, adding all these, like, cool little elements to it. Like, when Henry would do a guest spot here, he would do everything, like, in a thumbnail.
Right.
You know? And I always thought that was so cool because you can when you're just drawing, like, a thumbnail, you can get the proportions and everything so cool. Way better, I think, than if you're drawing some big ass, you know, stretched out.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I really like that style a lot. And so you're doing... Do you do a lot of group... How much do you paint these days? You've been working on a big thing here the last couple of days, which everybody's been super impressed by. I thought it looks awesome.
Thank you.
I was more... I mean, I think it looks fucking awesome, but I was more concerned how you were going to get it out of my backyard. Because I was like, I wonder if he knows that there's no way out of here. Like, that he just has this giant fucking enormous canvas that he's got to somehow get to the street or get to the location wherever the art show's at. Do you paint a lot in San Francisco still?
I try to paint as much as I can when I'm not working because I obviously love painting. So
yeah, that's a great way to stay sharp. It's an awesome way to just stay keep your mind in the game and just approach things from a different direction. And tell me about the show that you're doing here at Toy Tokyo.
The Toy Tokyo show, I'm really honored to be part of it.
Right.
Because of the main person doing the show is Puzzhead.
Puzzhead, yeah, and, the Skull Master.
The Skull Master.
Every, like, you know, every metal album cover. Not one person that has ever looked at a punk rock album cover has not fucking loved Puzzhead.
Exactly. So I was not different. So, like, even though I grew up in Brazil, matter of fact, like, a lot of the punk rock albums that he did artwork for, some of them only got released in some South American countries in Europe. Some didn't get released here.
Okay.
And I was just lucky enough to go, you know.
Well, he was always very forward-looking. I remember, because I used to see his band when Septic Death was playing in the 80s. All the music he was into was all crazy, like Olo Seco and like all this Brazilian hardcore. Yeah. And then also like all this like hardcore from Finland and like weird Japanese hardcore. So his mind was, he was always into weird, obscure shit anyways. And then he found a market because those people loved his shit also. Like they were super, you know, like they were fiending so much for that culture that like he, you know, that somebody reached out to them. They thought it was fucking awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. And even though I was a kid, I realized all that shit. Wow, this guy.
That was the first, like, some of the first, you know, like, I remember just, like, looking at his drawings, and then, you know, you would be like, okay, well, I'm gonna, he would do a drawing of, like, a fucking skeleton with a bandana on its head doing a fucking hand plant. And I'm like, well, I'm going to draw that same guy in a bunch of different poses. You know, like, that's how I would, like, but I would, I'd still copy all, like, the way the face was drawn. So it's like, you just pick up a lot of, like, those elements, or he'd do, like, some crazy skinhead zombie. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to draw this guy doing something else with, like, a motorcycle helmet on. You know,
for sure. Dude, when I was, like 12 years old, like, I'd probably be like, dude, I'm going to fucking... I know how to sign like Puzzhead. Check it out.
Totally. It was a cooler, more advanced version of like the Eddie from Iron Maiden. Because I remember first time doing that.
Yes,
like,
Derek Higg.
Yeah. I would draw Eddie doing all these different other things that had nothing to do with Iron Maiden. You know, I'd make him with like a mohawk or something. Yeah, and then moving on to that. So, all right, man. Well, what's the date of the show, and how can people see your work?
The show is going to be October 31st.
Okay, so it's a ways away.
Yeah.
But, and it's going to be at Toy Tokyo, New York City, it's East Village, right? It's on 2nd Avenue? Yes, it is.
2nd Avenue between 5th and 6th.
5th and 6th.
Yeah.
And so where can people see your work yourself, Lango?
They can go my tattoo work, and they can go to Skull and Sword.
Skull and Sword.
SkullandSword.com.
SkullandSword.com. Or your Instagram is?
My Instagram is Lango Oliveira, which is my last name.
At Lango Oliveira.
Yes, at Lango Oliveira. It's hard to spell that shit. If
you can't figure it out, then, you know, I don't know what to tell you.
The show is going to be at that Toy Tokyo place. So it should be pretty cool.
Awesome. All right, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's a really nice surprise. And, you know, you're always welcome here with us. We're all family, all right?
Thank you so much. All right, man. Go take care, brother. Me here.
Of course, man.
Bye.